Spot the Love, everyone. My name is Better Israel Abel Talia Hawkins. It's now time to find your seats for Sabbath services.
Goodbye, Shalom, everyone. My name is Daughter Julian here, and I want to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and the honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Israel who are now entering the sanctuary.
Shabbat Shalom, Saints of God. Please sit. Preparing for Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the theme today. With only 96 days left, being here is priority to be safe. In purple linen, the saints will be arrayed, cleansing our bodies to serve to our best, and with a positive, humble attitude to never hurt. 96 days left from this Passover. Psalms 96, verse 3 and 6. Declare his glory among the nations, his wonders among all people. Honor and majesty are in his presence. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Please welcome our first speaker.
Shabbat Shalom, great saints of God. Please be seated. Don't just read. My title is Don't Just Read It, Study It, to prepare for the feast. You read and study the book of Yahweh. Positive Law 10 says, read, study, and meditate on the book of the law. Deuteronomy 6 verse 7. And you must teach them diligently to your children and talk about them when you sit in your house, when you walk on the road, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. As an example of the way to study is building a concordance. I brought with me my sister's concordance to share with you. One says, give instruction, advice to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and it will add to his learning. Proverbs 9, verse 9. One is the firmament, and it has articles and a picture. Another one says, rejoice, there is joy in the house of God. Yahweh's sacred calendar. Learn to teach. Second Timothy 2 verse 15 says, study to show yourself approved to God. A workman who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, the law and the prophets. In the sixth book of Joshua, chapter 41, verse 60, he says, in fact, everybody here has got to be a teacher. Now, the only way you could do this is start studying. You know you could do it. Prepare for the great feast of Passover and unleavened bread by caring for the exam. Please stand for the next speaker.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. The title of my speech is Building Positive Habits. The theme for today is getting ready for Passover. I was thinking one of the things Overseer keeps mentioning is not wasting our time. Use our time wisely and study. Not just read, but study everything. By being diligent in studying, we need to make it a habit. I looked up some of the benefits for forming positive habits, and some of them are building great habits brings us closer to our goals. The first step to reach any goal is to start and stick with a daily habit. Great habits build the foundation for your life. Habits become you, and the habits you choose to follow will in part set the tone in your life. And an example is spending time with your children with joy, it will make you a more joyful person. Great habits reduce wasted time. Creating positive habits will help you reduce the time we waste and become more efficient and productive. Great habits replace motivation. When something becomes a habit, it becomes as natural as breathing. It's easier to do them without consistently looking for motivation. These are just some of the ways we benefit from building positive habits. Start planning now and make this feast the best feast ever. And with this, I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shabbat Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please sit. Let the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of us who are here today. All those who are joining us over different forms of media. And those of us who are hungering and thirsting after Yahweh's righteousness. And also a very warm welcome to our body of women, body of sisters who will be speaking. Continuing from the theme on getting ready for the Passover, and also considering Yeshua and the life that he lived, Yeshua Messiah, the life that he lived on earth as a man, and the things he did, and although he was not believed, he kept the faith, he did his part to become our Savior. Now, talking about Yeshua Messiah, that was a man. He was a real man walking on earth, not half man. Not half God, sorry. A real man. And you think of a person without fear, unafraid of everything. He was not afraid of anything. And look at us. Is it the spider season, sisters? Is it spider season? Yes, spiders. Is it their season? We don't know. Okay. Well, anyway, think of spiders, what spiders do to us when we see a spider. And it just occurred to me that I gave the speech when we spoke in our last women's presentation about fear, I spoke about fear. And then 2 days after that, I'm opening my door and I'm seeing a big spider. So I said, children, there's a spider. The children said, take a picture or describe it. So I said, it has a small head, but very, very, very long, 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 long legs. They said, okay, it's a garden spider. Just put it in a big cup and put it outside. So this is true now. The same time I spoke about fear. I am opening this door and I'm going to have my breakfast. House of Yahweh bagel, House of Yahweh coffee, nice breakfast. House of Yahweh cheese. And I'm seeing something on the floor. I say, I'm talking about Yeshua had no fear. I say, What's it on the floor right there where I had to pass? That must be the girl's necklace. No, but necklace not so big, So I said, well, it's a piece of rope or something. No, what's the nice patterns it has? Then my feet began to get so weak, I could not talk. My mind said to me, it's an S-N-A-K-E. It's true. It was an... So I said, just reverse quietly now. I reversed. I said, mother, a snake. She said, let me see it. Let me come and see it. And then her face dropped. She said, oh, a small one. So let us try to be like Yeshua. All these things were his friends. He was not afraid of anything. So let's continue to focus and remember Yeshua and ask Yahweh to make us more like him so we can be in unity and in harmony with all of Yahweh's creations, okay? And with that, we turn over to our first great speaker. Praise Yahweh.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. So the Feast of Passover is approaching quickly. And every day, the kingdom gets closer. This means that we should really be examining ourselves. Time is short. In fact, too short. All of our energy and time should be put on getting the sin out by Passover. We should be cleansing our bodies physically, spiritually, inside and out, until we get to the point that we hate sin the way Yahweh hates sin. Now, you're probably thinking, feast is still a while away. I'll start working on myself when feast gets closer. But why not just start now? Yeshua gave us an example to follow. He taught us to put away the sinful ways and to praise and follow after the righteous things. Today, I want to focus on how we can get ready for Passover by following Yeshua's example. Yeshua set the example of being perfect. Matthew 5:48 says, therefore, become perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Through constant hard work, dedication, and overcoming, we will become perfect. 2 Timothy 3:17 says that the man or woman of Yahweh will become perfect, thoroughly furnished for every righteous work. We can become perfect because Yeshua was perfect. Yeshua also taught to treat others the way we should want to be treated. In Matthew 7:12, it shows us this, and it says, therefore, all things you want men to do to you, do the same to them, for this is the teaching of the law and the prophets. You have to love one another and treat others the way you would want to be treated and serve others the way you want to be served. And one thing Yeshua always showed was his love for Yahweh. And if we truly love Yahweh, it will help us a lot when trying to prepare ourselves for feast. 1 Yochanan 4:12 says, no man has seen Yahweh at any time. If we love one another, Yahweh dwells in us, and his love is perfected in us. So you see, when we love one another, Yahweh's love is within us, and Yahweh's love perfects us. So I encourage you to take after Yeshua's example. He lived a sinless life. So that means we can overcome the sin in our life. By Passover, let's strive to be sin-free, because if Yeshua did it, you can do it too. And now I'll turn it over to the first speaker.
You can be seated. How strong is your heart and mind? That's the title of my speech today. The Feast of Passover is about 3 months away, and even though that might seem like a long time, it actually goes by pretty fast, and a lot of preparation goes into it. But one of the most important parts of preparing is not physical, such as picking out your clothes or cleaning your house or organizing that long list of duties that you have to do, but it is the preparation of the heart and the mind that is most important. There is a quote that says, where the mind goes, the body will follow. Proverbs 23, verse 7 says, for as he thinks in his mind, so the same way he is. The mind is very powerful, and we can do anything we set our minds to do. In order to prepare for Passover, We have to strengthen our minds and hearts, as it will affect how we prepare physically. We're talking about Yeshua being our perfect example. And when we look at the life of Yeshua, we see a man who had a great job ahead of him. Yeshua was called to die for all of us so that we could have the opportunity to live a life of Yahweh's laws and become like Yahweh. Now imagine the strength that Yeshua had to possess in his mind in order to allow himself to be killed, and then the trust that he had to have in Yahweh that he would resurrect him on the third day. So how did Yeshua prepare himself to be our Passover lamb? What did he do to strengthen his heart and mind? Well, let's read Luke chapter 2, verse 41 to 46. Please turn there. Luke chapter 2, verse 41 to 46 on page 783. Okay. Everybody there? We're going to read it together. Okay, starting verse 41. Now every year, his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of Passover. Once, when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem for the feast as usual. And when the feast days were over, they left, but the boy remained behind in Jerusalem. Verse 44, then they searched for him among their relatives and friends. But when they did not find him, they turned back to Jerusalem seeking him. Finally, after 3 days, they found him in the sacred precincts, sitting in the midst of the doctors, teachers of the laws of Yahweh, both listening to them and asking questions. What was Yeshua doing here? It was two key things. First, well, he was sitting in the midst of the doctors, teachers of the laws of Yahweh, both listening to them and asking questions. When was the last time you not only listened, but asked questions? How often have we taken the time to ask questions when we don't understand? Listening to instruction and knowledge is great and very important, but so is asking questions, which many of us can neglect to do. There are several reasons why we might be hesitant to ask. I know for me, sometimes I have a lot of questions about a lot of things, but I'm afraid to ask because it's fear of rejection or embarrassment or what other people might be thinking about what I ask. Or maybe we would just rather assume and figure it out ourselves. We have the mentality of, I can do it by myself, I don't need anybody's help. Or sometimes we feel like we have to or should know the answer, so why ask? But Proverbs 11, verse 14 says, where there is no wise guidance, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to not have all the answers and to not know everything. Nobody does except Yahweh. We were called here to learn, and that is what we will forever be doing. Asking for help and guidance doesn't make you weak. It shows wisdom and strength. Asking for clarification when you don't know something or you don't understand shows both humility and maturity. Yeshua gave us the perfect example by both listening to his teachers and asking them questions so he could gain both knowledge and understanding to later teach others. It also helped him to develop a strong faith in Yahweh. So don't ever be afraid to ask questions. It helps us gain understanding and become strong in Yahweh. Proverbs 4, verse 7 says, wisdom is the first in priority, so get wisdom. And with all you have gotten, get understanding. So, how strong is your heart and mind? Remember, where the mind goes, the body follows. Luke 2, chapter 52, tells us Yeshua increased in wisdom, in age, and in honor with Yahweh and man. We can do the same by following in his footsteps. So let us prepare ourselves like Yeshua. Strengthen your hearts, strengthen your minds. Don't just listen, but ask questions too. And you will succeed. And if you all please stand. It is an honor to speak before you all, and I turn it over to the next speaker.
Shabbat Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. Peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. My title is The Command Has Been Given to Come and Stay at the House of Yahweh. I was inspired to put these things in the Eumetria, the flying witnesses. And if you can see, the simple is the Greek 239, hallelujah. In the Hebrew, it's 239, to weigh, test, and prove. In the Sumerian, 1434, the Greek, a gift, bestowment. In 1434, twisted threads, tzitzits. And then for the Jewish, it's Greek 1924, to write up. 1924, that's Jacob's birth year, the first of the two witnesses. And then 1434, I broke that down. In the Hebrew, 14, to be willing, to consent. And in the Greek, 14, to do good, which is great. And 34, for this generation, the nuclear generation. These all describe Pastor. The next one I put in was Israel's linen. In the simple, it came to Hebrew 8, 182, a cause. And in the Samaritan, it's the Greek 1092, husbandman, vine dresser. And then the Jewish, it came to Greek 1204, until now, come here. This is confirmation. Heaven heard the call that Pastor gave for 2020, and we approve this. In the sixth book of Israel, chapter 25, 20 through 22, verse 16, Yahshua himself will descend from heaven with. Pastor is referring to 1 Thessalonians 4:16, where Yahshua himself will descend with a shout, with the voice of the Malak Gaud, and with the trumpet of Yahweh, and the dead in the Messiah will be raised first. There's a side note for shout. It's orders or command that by which are given to me. But this actually is a command by the house of Yahweh, the group in the last days, as to when we say we are ready for Yahshua, come on, that we will be given and it will be prophesied. In fact, we don't prophesy it. It won't take place. Yahweh shows that. There's a reason prophecy is so important. It's got to be prophesied first, each thing, before the command is given in heaven, what is bound on earth. Matithiah 18:18, page 746. I truly say to you, whatever you declare to be unlawful on earth is that which has been declared unlawful in heaven. And whatever you declare lawful on earth will be as which has been declared lawful in heaven. Scripture references Matithiah 17:19 for your notes. What will bind you on the earth? How do you bind it? With words. Establish all things with words. And we all just learned how powerful words and vows are in the first book of Israel, chapter 6, sermon date 4:26:03. And Matithiah 6:10, page 732, your kingdom come, your will be done in earth as it is in heaven. His chosen house in these last days will do this. And the apostle said, Yeshua won't come without a command to do so. And he will come under the command when it says it is time. When we say we're ready, come on, then he will come. See why we have to be in unity, house of Yahweh? In Matithiah 18:19, page 746, again, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth, which concerns anything that they are asked, it will be done for them by my Father who is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am in the midst of them. Now go back to 22. For Yahshua himself will descend from heaven with a great shout, and this is a command, the voice of the Malak Gadol. And it's a high-ranking Malak. And the dead in the Messiah will be raised first. Gadol is a Hebrew word, 14:19. It means great Malak, a.k.a. messenger, or high-ranking Malak messenger. This is our pastor giving the command for all people to come home for Passover 2020 and stay. You'll see who will be called next, right? In the Yematria, I put one sent by Yahweh, and that came up to the Sumerian 12:12. In the Greek means clear and evident, and in the Hebrew means in the shadow of protection. That's Psalms 91. And Revelations 22, 16 and 17, page 986. I, Yahshua, have sent my Malak to testify to you all the things in the congregations of the house of Yahweh. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star. And the Spirit and the bride says, come. And let who hears say, come. And let him who is thirsty come. And whoever will, let him take the water of the life freely. And 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18, page 904. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says Yahweh. Do not touch the unclean thing, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and my daughters, says Yahweh Almighty. In Revelations 18, 4, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, so that you do not partake in her sins, and so that you do not receive of her plagues. And in Psalms 24, 3 through 6, page 442, who shall ascend into the hill of his, and who shall stand in Yahweh's holy place? He who does have clean hands and a pure heart will stand in Yahweh's holy place. He who has not lifted up his mind to any god, El, and he who had never vowed deceitfully will stand in Yahweh's holy place. He will receive the blessings from great Yahweh, righteousness from Yahweh, his salvation. We are those that seek you, the true Jacob and Israel. We seek your face. This generation does seek great Yahweh, Saleh. The year 2020. 2020 in Strong's is Hebrew word deliverance. And in the Greek, it means to shine and to dawn. In Yael 2:32, and whosoever will hear the call, will be calling my name, Yahweh, will be delivered. For in Mount Zion in Jerusalem, there will be deliverance. As Yahweh said, and among the remnant who has escaped from those whom Yahweh has called. So the command has been given from the great Malach at Abel, come to Passover 2020 and stay and stand in your place. Yahweh bless your understanding. I turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. You please be seated. The title of my speech today is The Greatest Role Model. So what is a role model? According to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, a role model is a person whose behavior in a particular role is imitated by others, and dictionary.com says it's a person who serves as an example of the values, attitudes, and behaviors associated with the role. In other words, it's someone you look up to and you want to become like. Now, there comes a time in every child's life when they have to make a decision as to who they want to be like. I'd like everybody to think back to your first role model. What were they like? Were they quiet? Were they shy? Were they loud and outgoing? Were they smooth, or were they a little clumsy? Of course, they had to be cool. They had to be cool. Otherwise, they wouldn't have caught your attention. I remember the second time in my life that I said that I wanted to be like someone else. I was in the third grade. And now I was the type of girl who lived in her own head a lot. I was quiet and reserved. I didn't talk to a lot of people. I kind of kept to myself, and I was comfortable being alone. Going to school was fun and exciting for me. And yes, let's finish the cliche. I was a scrawny, non-athletic girl who wore really large glasses. So you can imagine what I went through. Anyway, one particular sunny afternoon, I was sitting outside on the stairs watching the other children play during recess. And one of my teachers came out to me, and she asked me, she's like, how you doing? You doing okay? Are you liking the lessons? And something I said must have caught her attention, because she looked at me, and I will never forget what she told me. She said, it doesn't matter what the others think of you. You are proving your worth to Yahweh, not to them. Yahweh made you the way you are for a reason, and you're special to him. Don't you think that that means he loves you? So why worry about the ones that are mean and focus more on you becoming the best you for Yahweh? And then she said something about not getting sunburns and she left. My mind was blown. Like, I had no idea I could even do that. I was seeing a whole new world, and it was awesome. I was like, okay, I could do that. But let me tell you, if I could be even a tenth of this woman, I would be doing amazing. I'd be doing great. Never have any issues. But I'm going to keep working at it because I'd rather stand beside her than somewhere in her shadow. I'd like to read from the 15th book of Israel, chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. It says, There were seven lamps in this planned work that were set before Yeshua. He is, as far as I can see, Yeshua is the only one who understood the prophecies. Others understood some of them, but not all. They were in question about them and even wept because they couldn't understand. But Yeshua understood them, and when he read this prophecy right here, he knew that it was he who was being spoken of. His family had a very guarded training period, seeing to it that they were trained and they would train Yeshua Messiah. And he would take his job, understanding this. He willingly accepted it. Yahweh shows from the very beginning as a young child. Yeshua knew in vivid detail what he was going to go through. And he kept right on going. He never stopped. He just kept going down that path of righteousness, teaching everyone who would listen to him. He never swerved. He never gave up. He just kept going. And what did he do when the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Essenes and Herodians tried to trip him up? He told them in Matthew 7, 21 through 23, I never knew you. Get away from me, you who practice iniquity. And what about the adversary when she tried it? Matthew 4, verse 1 through 10, I actually want to read verse 10. He told her, Matthew 4, verse 10, Then Yeshua said to her, You get away, Satan, for it is written, Yahweh, your father, you must reverence, and him only you must serve. He was firm. He knew the law, and he believed it with his entire being. He never, ever gave in. The book of Yahweh is filled with men and women who believed in Yahweh, and they loved him with everything that they are. It's filled with them. I mean, it's a really thick book, guys, and it's filled with people. But sometimes maybe do we forget that they're not stories written for our entertainment? They were real people. They laughed. They cried. They fought. They taught. They bled. They lived. They weren't just imaginary people. They were real. And Yahweh, in his infinite wisdom, allowed them to be written so we could learn and grow with Yeshua at the front and center, teaching us, this is the way, walk in it. Never swerve, never give up. He died. He was tortured. We got nothing on this man. Compared to what he went through, our life is easy. The great overseer tells us constantly to search out the book of Yahweh and to study it. And going back to the 15th book of Israel, continuing in chapter 6, verse 19, it says, Now he was important. Yeshua, if you could think, this man was headed for the highest office that could be gained by mankind. But he was taking 12 people out, showing them the sins of this world and teaching them the true righteousness of Yahweh and the prophecies that they were to put their hands to. And he taught it well. The disciples didn't go out and offer their lives for this message for nothing. So he taught the disciples well, and they knew he was going to die, but they loved the man. They loved the man so much that they put it out of their minds. And they continued with the work. But there was nothing dainty about this man. He was a worker. He was a carpenter. He was a gardener. He was a fish cleaner. I can see him now in the cow milkers and the goat milkers and the cheesemakers and in the kitchen preparing food. I can see him all over this place. But he was not prestigious, and they despised him. In Isaiah 53:3, he is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrow and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised. They wanted to kill him. He knew all of this. He knew the prophecies, so he knew this was coming. He knew he had to suffer for it. Right here is what it was talking about. He knew that they wanted to kill him. But did it stop him? No, it didn't. It didn't matter to him that people hated him, that people ridiculed him, that people yelled at him, that they wanted to kill him. It didn't matter to him. He had a job to do, and he was going to do it. And guess what? He did do it. And to me, I think that's cool. And don't you think that is the greatest role model? But I've got a secret for you guys, okay? Role models aren't just for little children. They're for us big children, too. We should want to be like the Messiah, to take on that character. As Passover approaches, and if I counted correctly, it's 13 weeks, which isn't a lot of time considering it 2019 went by like that. We should think on these things. Think about what he taught us, what he went through, examining ourselves, becoming like him, and becoming the best us that we can be for Yahweh. In closing, I want to read the words of Yeshua, who loved us just as much, who does love us just as much as Yahweh loves us. In Yaakanan 17, verse 9 and 10, it says, I pray for them. I do not pray for the world, which is the carnal mind in man, but for those whom you have given me, for they are yours. And they are all mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. Yeshua doesn't give up on us just because he did what he had to do. Now he's there for us. He's telling us, just reach out. I'm here. I will help you. And that's why we have the greatest overseer in the world. That's why we have our counselors. That's why we have all of these things in place. Because he loves us enough to help us get to where he wants us to be, which is right next to him. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shabbat shalom. Y'all can be seated. All right, so last week we heard that there was 1.2 million people watching, so that made me a little nervous, so I asked one of my friends to come and help me, you know, moral support. I hope y'all don't mind. He's just gonna hang out right here. Y'all say shalom to my friend. Can y'all see him? All right. So we're talking about getting ready for the Passover, and since I've been here, I've learned quite a few different things that helped me. So I just want to share a few things with you. One thing is cleansing physically. I had never heard anything about that, but cleansing physically helps you to get rid of, you know, emotions, the bad toxins, all the different things. And remember on last week, Pastor told us that Adam sinned by the way he handled what Eve did, you know. So I think Adam should have done the liver cleanse, because we know that anger is stored in your liver. And I was speaking with a sister, don't judge me for this, but I was wondering if they were spirit beings, right? If they had their organs. Maybe I'll put that in the call for that question, but I think they did, because Pastor says there's a side note in Genesis 2 where it says that he gave the laws to mankind. And one of the laws, positive law number 3, is to love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and might. So I'm thinking they did have their organs, but either way, he should have done the liver cleanse because that gets rid of anger and different emotions. Sometimes you don't even know, like when Passover or any feast comes around, you have all this pressure and you're stressed and you're, you know, like everything is irritating to you. You have no idea why. But it's because Satan is working very, very hard and she's trying her hardest to get you to sin or to fall away. But if you do the things that you're taught, then you can guard yourself against that. Doing the liver cleanse is a very humbling experience because you have to drink these Epsom salts, right? And if you've ever stood in the mirror while you did it and you make this ugly face that you're like so glad nobody lives in the house with you, like you know that it's beneficial. You have to do it. You have to, because you want to become perfect. You want to make sure that you are doing your very best and striving to overcome and to be like Yeshua, right? So these are the things that we should be doing. Yeshua Messiah understood this, right? He never sinned. He never, ever lashed out. Pastor did point out in scripture where he got a little irritated with the disciples because they weren't listening and things like that. But he did not sin. He didn't show anger. He didn't let his emotions rule him the way that Adam did. We know that Yeshua really, really, really loved all of Yahweh's 613 laws. He saw the benefit. He saw the necessity of it. He despised God worship. You know, he despised the shame. And Hebrews 12:2 tells us that, right? Yeshua was very, very strict with keeping Yahweh's laws. And how do we know this? We know this because Pastor told us. Pastor told us in the first book of Israel, page 1, and it's verse 4, and this is the book that we're going over in our certification class. He says here, Yeshua is our king and high priest. He is soon to be ordained as king of kings and ruler of rulers because he qualified for that position. He believed Yahweh and followed his laws strictly. And very recently, a great friend of mine, she brought back to my remembrance the teachers of righteousness. You know, and one of the traits of being a teacher of righteousness is being strict. And that means never, ever growing tired of correcting sin. And I want to show y'all the... Isn't that cute? She colored it and everything for me. Okay, so never, ever growing tired of correcting sin. And you can also find that in Galatians 6:9. Yeshua did not have a mixture. He didn't teach the mixture. He was not for that. He was only for righteousness. And another thing we should be doing is studying, because we know that Satan has a counterfeit. She has a counterfeit for every single thing that Yahweh has, right? So we should be studying. And I came across something when I was reading the Mark of the Beast Part 1. This is on page 118. Pastor's talking about the seven kingdoms, but one paganistic religion. So no matter what religion it is, if it's not the house of Yahweh, it's just one religion. It comes from the tree of evil. And there's different ceremonies and practices that they do, but there's one that I just want to read on. The practice of washing the poor's feet, an imitation of our Lord's washing the feet of his disciples, and this is them trying to imitate Yeshua, right? The Church of Rome also professes to keep the fast of Lent with great strictness. Now, see, they wash the feet, and they're strict, but they're strict with the laws of the gods. They're strict with men's traditions and customs. And also, if you haven't had the opportunity to go down to the maze, you should really get down there, because there's a lot of great things that are down there, and Pastor says to study it before, you know, the feast. So there's one board. It has 1 Yochanan 3, verses 12 through 15. And right up under that scripture, It says, the morals deteriorated rapidly as Cain, the priest of the house of the gods, took the gods' teachings to all who lived upon the earth. Now, see, he was a teacher as well, but he taught the teachings of God worship. So he was not a teacher of righteousness. He was a teacher of the kingdom of the gods. And we know, as perfect as Yeshua was, he never sinned. You know, they still didn't believe him, but he still didn't give up. Yeshua was perfect, and even the disciples didn't believe him. And for sake of time, for your notes, the seventh book of Yeshua, part one, chapter 16, verse 104, pastor goes into an explanation about the disciples not believing them. They wanted to put their hands in his side and all these different things. Yeshua Messiah fulfilled every single prophecy about himself. And you can find that in Search of a Savior, pages 239 through 249. You know, and I just encourage everyone to really, really try to find something that works for you in your overcoming process and in your preparations. You know, just ask your sisters, ask different people about, you know, get advice, different tips that will help you. And last week, Pastor said, you know, make the people you teach love you. So I just want to tell you all that I love you very much, and I hope that after this lesson, you love me too. I do love you, and I want to invite the next sister up here, and I'm sure you're all going to love her. Yahweh bless.
Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. My title this morning is The Faith of Daniel. A few weeks ago, a dear sister asked me, who is a person in Scripture that inspires you? And my immediate answer was Daniel. The amount and depth of his faith in Yahweh is an incredible example to us. And as we prepare for Passover, I'm thinking, do we have faith like him? I want that. Today, I'd like to share with you my thoughts about Daniel and his faith. I think most of you are familiar with the story of Daniel in the lion's den, but I'm going to hit the highlights for you, and you can find the story in Daniel chapter 6. But I want to backtrack here, and I want to talk about how Daniel of Yada even got here, because it's important to understand how he grew to have the faith that he did. In Daniel chapter 1, we can read of the Babylonian captivity of Yada. King Nebuchadnezzar triumphed over Yada, and he had some of the children of Israel, those of the king's seed and of the nobles, brought to his kingdom. Daniel and his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, also known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were among them. We can read in this chapter how these boys upheld the laws of Yahweh, and they managed to get permission to not eat the unclean foods that the others were given. Now, as a side note here, these were children. And I have to say that their parents and teachers had done a really great job of instilling Yahweh's laws in them and teaching them. All of us who have the opportunity to teach children, we need to remember this example of what can be accomplished if we're diligent. We can put these laws in our own hearts, and we can put them in the hearts of our children. They were kidnapped and taken away from their teachers and parents, yet they convinced their captors to let them keep the law. Daniel chapter 1, verses 19 and 20 says that when the king questioned all the boys, none were found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah in all matters of wisdom and understanding. They were better than his own advisors. Through the next four chapters, we can read of these four boys and how they attained the respect and trust of the kings over them, and why they were all appointed to offices in the king's government. So we know that just like Proverbs 22:6 says, Daniel was trained up in the way he should go, and when he grew up, he did not depart from it, even though he was a captive in another land. We also see that he had chosen righteous friends, and that's a great example to all of us. Now, through the wonders that Yahweh performed through Daniel, even King Nebuchadnezzar began to worship Yahweh. And by the time we get to chapter 6, Daniel had been proclaimed the third ruler in the kingdom, and then Darius took over as king. Now, Darius set up 120 princes, and then he put three presidents over them, of whom Daniel was one. The other presidents and princes were very jealous of Daniel, but they couldn't find any fault in him because he was faithful. So they knew that the only thing that they could get him with was his keeping of Yahweh's laws. They had to trick the king into passing a law that couldn't be changed in order to trap Daniel. For 30 days, no one could pray to anyone but the king, and if they did, they'd be thrown into the den of lions. Now, this wasn't a small cave where a mother lion had her cute little cubs. This was a pit with hungry adult lions kept there just for the purpose of killing people. It was a death sentence that no one survived. That is how much these men hated Daniel. They wanted him dead. Did this worry Daniel? Did this scare Daniel? No. If it had, he could have just prayed secretly to Yahweh for 30 days in a back room and no one would have known. He didn't have to let anyone see him. But he really wasn't afraid. And he didn't let persecution alter his behavior. And that reminds me of our great pastor, who never lets persecution stop him. He prayed in his usual spot, facing his windows, and that's where the men assembled and discovered Daniel praying just as he had done before. So they went to the king and they told him, "We caught Daniel breaking your new law." Remember, King Darius had pretty high regard for Daniel, and he knew he'd been tricked at this point. He was pretty upset with himself, and he tried for the rest of the day to rescue Daniel. The men reminded him, "The law can't be changed." And King Darius knew he had no choice but to put Daniel in the lion's den. So the king went and he spoke to Daniel, and he told him, "Your God's going to have to save you." Of course, he meant Yahweh would have to save him, but he didn't worship Yahweh, and he didn't use Yahweh's name. So they threw Daniel in the lion's den. They laid a stone over the top, and the king put a seal on it with his signet, and that meant no one could open it back up without breaking the seal. Daniel still wasn't afraid. He trusted Yahweh. The king, on the other hand, was very worried. They didn't have a lion cam for him to watch what was going on over the internet. Daniel didn't have an iPhone with him to live stream his experience, nor was he able to snap selfies with the lions in the background saying, "Hey, I'm okay, Yahweh's got this," and post them out on Instagram or Facebook. So the king spent the night in distress, fasting and praying, and he didn't sleep. Then at first light, he hurried to the den. Now, this shows the impact that we can have on those we deal with in the world through our righteous example. This king didn't worship Yahweh, but he loved Daniel. In Daniel 6, verse 20, it tells us the king cried out with an anguished voice to Daniel, saying, "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve so faithfully, been able to save you from the lions?" And Daniel yelled back to him that Yahweh sent his Malach and closed the lion's mouth because he was found innocent before Yahweh and before the king. Then the king commanded that the evil men who had plotted against Daniel should be thrown in the lion's den for what they'd done. And just in case you think the lions weren't hungry when Daniel was there, verse 24 tells us that the lions jumped up and attacked them before they even hit the bottom of the den. That proves that Yahweh was indeed protecting Daniel. In Psalm 118, verses 6 through 9, it says, "Yahweh is with us. We will not fear. What can man do to us? Yahweh is with us and takes our part among those who help us. So we will look in triumph over our enemies who hate us. It is better to trust in Yahweh than to put confidence in man. It is better to trust in Yahweh than to put confidence in princes." Psalm 56, verse 4 says, "In you, Yahweh, we praise your law. In you, Yahweh, we have trusted. We will not fear, for what can flesh do to us?" And in the 8th book of Israel, part 2, chapter 15, verse 131, our pastor tells us, "Don't give in. Don't fear," Yahweh says. He says, "I am with you. So don't you fear. Don't fear what man can do to you. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Praise Yahweh." And that reward is soon to be revealed, brethren. That reward is soon to be achieved, very, very soon now, very close. Don't let anybody turn you away. The faith of Daniel humbles me and amazes me. They persecuted him for his righteousness. They threw him in the lion's den, but Daniel trusted Yahweh. Yahweh delivered Daniel's life. As we go to Passover this year, do we trust him in the same way? It's been an honor to speak before the called out ones of the house of Yahweh. I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, please be seated. Passover will soon be here. Praise Yahweh. Aren't the feasts of Yahweh wonderful? Oh, I love Yahweh's feast. I wasn't blessed enough to be raised in the house of Yahweh like some of you. And I did keep the pagan holidays for the first several years of my life. But I can testify that the pagan holidays are nothing compared to Yahweh's feast. There is nothing that the world can offer you that can compare to the love, the joy, the servitude, and the brilliant education that we receive at these feasts at the house of Yahweh. Am I right? This is Yahweh's last day's work. This is the place Yahweh has chosen in these last days. This is the protected place right here among Yahweh's people. The house, family of Yahweh. Remember, the house of Yahweh is the people. And this is where we are told to gather, where Yahweh's last day's witness is, Yisroel Hawkins. So we are getting ready for Passover. We're getting ourselves ready to partake of Yeshua's memorial worthily, removing all the sin out of our lives. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort on our parts. And Yahweh sees our great effort and it pleases him. The nations are angry. Have you been watching the news recently? Revelation 11, 18. Nuclear war is just around the corner, but we don't have to fear. Father Yahweh has a perfect plan. He will protect us, as Yeshua tells us in Revelation 3:10. He will keep us from the hour of temptation, the 1 hour burning. We have to make ourselves ready. We want to be like the wise virgins, not the foolish ones. The oil we need to fill up on is the teachings of the house of Yahweh, which come from the book of Yahweh, which is called the Bible, but is correctly called the book of Yahweh. We have to do the spiritual preparations for Passover. Time is really short. I mean, really, really short. If we follow our high priest and do what he says, can we go wrong? No, we will be very successful. So the first one is we must study, learn, and teach like Yeshua did. Yeshua was a very zealous and diligent student before he became a teacher. It was said that when he was only 12 years old, he learned from the priests, and his knowledge astounded them. He loved the feast so much that when it was over, he didn't want to go home. This is in Luke 2:43-49. And I know many of you, if not all of you, before you moved here, you didn't want to go back home after the feast either. Am I right? No, we didn't. So, see, we are a lot like Yeshua already. And the fact that Yeshua stayed after the feast and he wanted to stay and keep learning, that right there proves that Yeshua is working with Pastor right now and he's inspiring him. Where do you think Pastor got the idea for us to have those extended days after feast? Yeshua. Okay, so studying and teaching like Yeshua. We have lots and lots of classes we can attend here at Able, thanks to our pastor, Yisroel Hawkins, who is inspired by Yeshua. There's no shortage of classes or learning at the House of Yahweh. You can even watch them online. If you can't attend them here, we have classes on Sabbath morning, on Skype, and also classes right here in the sanctuary before service. Even in the afternoon, we have classes. There are many, many books we can read in the House of Yahweh. I mean, so many, they're countless. We have newsletters, prophetic word magazines. I don't know how Pastor does it, but he does. Pastor sermons can even be read. Remember, it says to preach and publish the message. The second thing is we have to correct sin like Yeshua corrected sin. We have to study like Yeshua studied to be able to correct sin like Yeshua corrected sin. Yeshua could identify when someone was sinning because he was a great student of the law. Just like Yahshua needed teachers growing up, so do we. Acts 8:30-31 says, "So Philip, running up to him, heard him reading the prophet Isaiah and said, 'Do you understand what you're reading?' And he said, 'How can I understand unless someone guides me?' Then he asked Philip if he would come up and sit with him. Proverbs 5:11 says, 'And you will mourn in the end times as your body, your flesh,'" "and body wasted away." Verse 13, "I would not obey my teachers." You see, we are prophesied to have teachers in the end times, and we should obey these teachers. Don't ever listen to anyone who says to you that you don't need a teacher in this time period. We need Yisrael Hawkins. He is being inspired and guided by Yahshua. Yahweh is only working with the house of Yahweh. So, Yahshua corrected sin because he understood the suffering, the death, and the destruction that sin brings. He corrected the religious leaders of his time because he knew the harm they were bringing to the people. In Matthew 15, 1 through 9, Yahshua corrected the scribes and the Pharisees for teaching as law the traditions of man. Yahshua rebuked his own disciples in Jacob and Yochanan. He rebuked his own disciples who were Jacob and Yochanan in Luke 9:51-56, when they asked him if he wanted them to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, the ones who would not welcome Yahshua. Yahshua corrected sin. He always corrected sin. This is what we must do. He knew the laws and the prophecies, and he loved them. That's why he could and desired to always correct sin. The third thing, we must also praise righteousness just like Yahshua did. In Luke 7, it talks about a centurion servant who had a centurion servant was sick and near death. And he requested Yeshua to come. But before Yeshua made it, he said, Yeshua, just say the word, and I know my servant's going to be healed. In verse 9, it says that Yeshua was amazed, and he turned around to the people with him, and he praised that man for his faith. In Luke 7:44, Yeshua praises the woman who washed and anointed his feet. And the fourth thing that we must do like Yahshua is we must eat honey and butter like Yahshua ate honey and butter. Isaiah 7:15 is a prophecy of Yahshua, and it says, it reads, "Honey and butter he will eat so that he may know to refuse evil and choose righteousness." And I looked that up in the Yamatria, and it came out to 5982, the word pillar, 5016, prophecy, and 8836, joyful one. These numbers bring to mind the prophecy of Revelation 3:12. "He who overcomes, I will make a pillar in the house of my Father, and he will never go out of it. And I will write upon him the name of my Father and the name of the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my Father, newly named." And it also makes me think of the joy. Yeshua was the joyful one, because when you keep Yahweh's laws, it brings you joy. Yochanan 15:11, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be complete." Butter is a great source of omega-3s, which are great for our brain. This article entitled "Enhancing Brain Function with Butter," written by St. George Health and Wellness on 10/5/2014, it says, "Butter is used by the body as an energy source and is high in iodine," which I didn't know, which is really great. If we've been eating our butter, we're getting that iodine that we need. "Butter provides you with loads of vitamin A to support thyroid and adrenal function. It also contains lauric acid, which keeps fungal growth down in your gut. And it has other benefits. It's great for our brain. It's also great for our heart, and there's other articles on that. Yeshua also fed the people fish that's high in omega-3s, which butter is also high in omega-3s, which is brain food. Pastor talked about letting our emotions rule over it with us, so I just wanted to bring some information out. I know Pastor has before spoken about cod liver oil, and maybe we've forgotten. So butter is really healthy for our brain. It helps us with those emotions and to balance our moods, and also the omega-3s from fish, and they're also plant sources. In closing, there were thousands that followed Yeshua at one time. Many, many, many of them were healed. There were so many, it says the books can't even contain all of them. We can't even read about all of them. And although the multitudes left him and stopped believing, except for a few of his disciples, he kept the faith. He never wavered. Let's remember Yeshua's example. in our spiritual and physical preparation for Passover, sisters. And I just want to say I love you, sisters, and I want to turn this over to the next speaker. Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. I would like to begin with bringing you a little note from Yahweh. Blessed are those who have eyes to see and ears to hear and can understand the message of the seventh Malak. The title of my speech today is 2020 Vision. Each lens tells a different message. The Roman world today has entered into the new year, 2020, following the instructions of their gods. Yahweh New Year comes at the sighting of the first moon of Abib, positive law number 153, found in Exodus 12:2 and Deuteronomy 16:1. Reading from Exodus 12:2, this moon shall be your beginning of the moons. It shall be the first moon of the year to you. And on the 15th day of the first moon, Yahweh Feast of Passover is celebrated in the year 2020. Tentatively scheduled, 4th Roman month, 7-2020, and it runs to the 4th Roman month, 15-2020. So you see, all must have a vision. At 2020 vision, the image seen depends upon the lens you are looking through. The world sees through the eyes of their gods, and all they see, all things bright and beautiful. The house of Yahweh looked only through Yahweh's eyes, and he gave us the perfect 2020 vision. And it comes from his laws and prophecies. Isaiah 8:20 says, to the laws and to the prophets, if they speak not according to it, it's because there is no light in them, no truth in them. Now, I want to bring you a news. News taken from the Voice of America. Pope Francis wishes the faithful a new year of peace, 2020. He said, peace is the path of hope, a path on which one advances through dialogue, reconciliation, and conversion. Earlier that day, Pope Francis said, he speaks out against violence inflicted upon women in this modern society. So let's please take a look at Pope Francis' non-violent peaceful talk and reconciliation in action. Can I please have my video, please?
Love makes us patient. So many times we lose patience, even me, and I apologize for yesterday's bad example.
Praise Yahweh. So the question of the day is, do you think that Pope Francis and the gods can bring peace and end war? Yes. The scripture says no.
So, second Thessalonian, you said no or did you say yes? The answer is no. The scripture in 2 Thessalonians 5:3 says, when they say peace and true peace, comes sudden destruction. Isaiah 59:8 says, they know not the way to peace, for they make crooked paths, and all who walk in them will know no peace. Yahweh, on the other hand, is saying in Psalms 119:165, great peace have those who love my laws and nothing will offend them. So let's take a look at the year 2020 through Yahweh's lens in Yametrias. Can I have my first slide, please? Now, the year 2020, we have three. The Jewish one is 3576, English 1578, and the simple is 269. Now, Hebrew 3:35-76 shows falsehood, treachery, lies, deception. Going to Hebrew 15:78, it shows you shun, avoid, get out of, as in Revelation 18:4. The last one, Jewish 2:63, it shows you perpetual, as in Yahweh's feast days and Sabbath are perpetual, eternal. Looking through another lens at the prophetic word 2020, our great overseer shown for us. A great gathering, the great gathering is now. 2 billion people turning to Yahweh. Prophecy, so accurate. They show the time, the date, peace, and how many will die. Now, I want to take you to the 12th page of this prophetic word. It says atomic Armageddon is 30 minutes away. Depopulation is coming. And the date, to this date, pastor gave us the population on the earth. 7,718,250,426. He says, in the book of Yahweh or the King James Version show, 2 billion people will seek the house of Yahweh and his righteousness as the Savior Yeshua Messiah show in Matthew 6:33. Now, I take the time to look that up also in Yametria and the depopulation coming. We get the Jewish number 738. It shows lion, sons of sons of the violence. It also shows lion of God and lion-like men. Lion of the God speaks of Satan, the devil, and lion-like men speaks of Yada, who is the lion cub. So Yada and Satan will bring depopulation in this world. Now, I took the time to see how we can work out that 2 billion coming. Now, Yeshua gave us the guide in which we can go. Using Yeshua's equation, 3 out of 4 will fall away. We see the population number. If you round that figure up to the nearest billion, you will have 8 billion. 3/4 of 8 billion shows 6 billion will die and fall away. 1/4 of that 8 billion shows 2 billion remaining, few men will left. Now, going on, I wanted to just go to the point where we can see Pope Francis. I want to get back to Pope Francis. Pope Francis, our Savior Yeshua Messiah, gave you an example to follow. He was placed in the same situation, same as you. So let us see Yeshua's example when his faithful one came to him. We can find that in Matthew 9:20-22. Let us read that. Can I have that at the overhead, please? Behold, a woman who had suffered with the issue of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the tzitzit of his talit. For the woman said to herself, if only I can touch his talit, I will be made whole. And Yeshua turned around, and when he saw her, he said, daughter, be greatly comforted, for your faith has made you whole. This woman was made whole. Just like Yeshua, our great overseer, when he was put under the test. He was falsely arrested. $10 million bond on his head. He did not retaliate. But what he did instead, he said, I love the work of Yahweh. So in closing, I want to say, Pope Francis and the Vatican, righteousness is a choice. You can choose righteousness, but you didn't. You choose the ways of the gods. At this time, the table has turned. We are going through the rollover, and 2 billion people will be here celebrating Yahweh's Passover, and together we will say, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh.
Shabbat shalom, great sisters. Have a seat. The title of my speech is An Opportunity of a Lifetime. I know you've heard that title before, but I didn't want to change mine, so I kept another great speaker. So we have a great society here at the Great House of Yahweh. And I want to start, before I continue, I want to start with a little just short story. When I was a little girl, I was 7 years old, and I ran to my parents because it just kind of hit me that I wanted to be a teacher. And I ran to my parents and I said, I already know what I want to be when I grow up. And so they asked me, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? I said, I want to be a teacher forever. And they said, well, you can be anything that you set your mind to do. And whatever you want to be, you can become that. So, of course, at that age, I didn't know Yahweh. I had no idea what a teacher of righteousness was. But when I came to the Peaceful Solution, I fell in love with this beautiful program. And I began to understand what a teacher truly was. And I remember sitting at the Peaceful Solution Center and going through a book because I was trying to get involved and be a teacher. And so I was going through a self-control book, and on page 58, it said, no one makes me angry. So I thought, I need to tell my director there's a misprint here, right? And I said, because obviously no one's told them. It's still here. I said, of course people make you angry. I carry a list of people that make me angry, right? So I kind of, you know, it just really hit me. And I started reading what it followed, and it said, whether you understand it or not, you make a conscious choice to get angry. And that was overwhelming for me to take in. I thought, what is relief at the same time, because I said, I have that choice. Like, no one has that choice for me. So when I was given that opportunity to start teaching the Peaceful Solution, first of all, I said, what was I thinking? I can't teach this program. And I remember telling my director, I want to buy the book. I'm going to go home, and I'll be back in about 10 years. And he looked at me and was like, it was 10 years? And I said, well, maybe 5, because I can be pretty disciplined and determined. And I said, see, I used to read the King James Version, so I said, I'm like the Apostle Paul. Everything this book says I should do, I don't do. And what I shouldn't do, that's what I do. So he said, you know, you need to come back, and as you teach others, you teach yourself. And I am so thankful for that opportunity, because it's for that reason that I'm here today. This program changed my life. And every week, I have the great blessing and opportunity to teach from 10 to 13 Skype classes, Peaceful Solution classes. And I see how this program transforms these people's hearts and minds. And on page 153 of the Self-Control Unit, in chapter 6, it says, the strength of a society lies in the conduct of individuals. Because here at the great city of Israel, we're learning to be those teachers that will teach war no more. And on in the third book of Israel, chapter 8, verse 24, Pastor says, "You are the teachers of tomorrow. You're training today, but you're going to be the teachers of 2 billion people here real soon." And that's our training. That's what we're doing here every day when we wake up and go to work. We're training to be those teachers. We're practicing the peaceful solution. We're being peaceful solution instructors to each other every day. And there was there's a very interesting word that I love in the Building Moral Excellence, and that's interdependent, mutually dependent. That means we depend on one another, sisters. We depend on one another. I have had another great opportunity to have been able to work in several of the many departments here at the great city of Israel. And I'm telling you, every department is a team. And, of course, a team is made up of individuals. And how we conduct each other as individuals, it's what makes that team. And so not only are we interdependent as individuals, but the departments are interdependent with one another. And our strength is in the, like the Peaceful Solution says, at the Great City of Israel, comes from us practicing this beautiful program with one another and becoming perfect. Because we can. Yahweh says we can. And that's what we're striving for every day. And in 1 Kefa 3:15, it says, "But sanctify Yahweh our Father in your hearts and always be ready to give an answer to everyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, with meekness and fear, which we know is reverence," humbleness and reverence. So that means in order for us to have an answer, we must be studying. We must be learning from one another. The song, The Salvation, says, "Learning war no more is the everlasting power." So in order for these 2 billion people that are coming to us to learn war no more, that means that their teachers who are sitting right here will be teaching war no more. And that comes through our example. And on page 156 of the self-control book, it says, "A lack of self-control affects our society." You know, Yeshua never sinned, and he says, "I bring my body into subjection." He brought into subjection every thought. Now, that's what we're practicing to do. We're practicing to bring every thought into subjection to where we will sin no more. And we are coming, you know, a great Kohana walked in the South office when I was working there, and she said, "Do y'all know what day it is today?" And, you know, we look at each other and we said, "Yes, it's, I forgot what the date was, I-6 something." And then she said, and we're like, "Well, what is it?" But I'm like, we're trying to, and we're looking at each other, and we're trying to, you know, tell each other, "Well, what is it?" And she says, "We're one day closer to Yeshua coming." And I'm going to praise Yahweh. Yes, we are. We have to remember that as every day goes by, we're one day closer. And so our time is here. Our time is now. The 2 Timaiah 4:2 says, "Be instant, ready to take your positions, in season, out of season." And again, the only way we can do that is to be prepared, is to be constantly reading the books of Israel, reading the Peaceful Solution, ingraining our minds with it, so that everything that comes out of our mouths is exactly the Peaceful Solution. A great Kohan gave a sermon on 8:25:18, and he gave us a list of slides from the Building Moral Excellence where all of those phrases equal 1074, which we know is our pastor's tag number, Yahweh's confirming his work. And the phrases were the power for peace, the gift of an education in character, these laws teach peace, the laws change a heart, heart converting. Those are just some of them. There were seven. So We know that the peaceful solution truly changes the heart and minds of those of us that are practicing it. We see it. You know, these individual departments that are not, they're not dependent. We're part of the great city of Israel, and we make one city together. And that's where our strength is coming from us practicing this peaceful solution. And like the great speaker before, many speakers have spoken about us getting ready for Yeshua's memorial, but she said, as we come to that perfection, we have to correct sin. We have to, whenever something is done incorrectly, we need to fix it, we need to correct it. Well, we can. We need to use a peaceful solution when we're pointing out things to one another, that our thoughts and words and actions are always of kindness towards each other, and that we do correct sin. We do. We have to. But that we do it in a loving, kind manner. Sisters, it's been a great blessing speaking to you all today. If you would please stand and help me welcome the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. As always, it is a great pleasure and joy to stand before the called out ones in these last days. I am so thankful to be able to be here, to be able to talk with you today. One of the things that I want us to think about is how soon Passover will be here. 94 days, approximately 13 weeks. And we know that here at Abel, time flies faster than any place else on the face of the planet. We will go to bed tonight and wake up, and it'll be 3 days before Passover. I promise you. I promise you. And everyone will be scattering. Oh, no, I didn't do this. I didn't do that. Am I speaking the truth? Yes. It's true. Now, one of the things that's so important about Passover is removing the leavening from our homes. And we are very diligent about that, aren't we? We take the product out of the cupboard and we look at the label. Sometimes we have to get a magnifying glass because the print is so small. What does that say? Somebody Google this word. Is it leavened? Now, when was the last time we stopped to scrutinize our thoughts in the same way? And see, that brings me to the title of my speech today, which is that introspection and determination is part of preparation. The word introspection means to carefully examine one's own thoughts and emotions. It didn't say carefully examine your neighbor's thoughts and emotions. But our own, we have a responsibility to Yahweh to examine ourselves so that we can become perfect before Him. Now, when was the last time you thought about what you think about? If you want to know what you think about, what's crowding our brains, have a sleepless night. I promise you. As you lay there tossing from one side of the pillow to the next, you're going to become very in tune with what you're thinking about. What is your focus? Is it on who got something that you didn't get? Is it on the slight that you felt that day or the slight that you felt 10 years ago? What do you focus on? That's the question that we have to ask ourselves as we prepare for Sabbath, for the great Sabbath, the great feast of Passover. Be thinking, what am I thinking about? Now, we know that thoughts lead to emotions. And we have thoughts that trigger emotions. Just like that. I like to think of emotions as an anthill. Now, you walk past the anthill, it looks fine, right? You can see, some action going on. Disturb that anthill. What occurs? Ants are going everywhere. Sometimes we are like that. One disturbance. But I want us to realize that it's not as instant a reaction as we think. It begins with our thoughts. A thought triggered that emotional response in us. We have to be careful that we don't become puppets. Puppets to our thoughts and our emotions. Now, this is where introspection ends and determination begins. Because once we've determined that some of these thoughts that's crowding our minds and causing these emotional responses within us are leavened, let me repeat it again, our thoughts are leavened, well, what do we do now? If we were taking physical leavening out of our cupboard, we would, yeah, that's leavening, and we would put it aside. But what do we do with our thoughts? We dust them off, plop them right back on the shelf in our heads. And we nurture them, don't we? Come on, be truthful with me. We nurture them. We give them supplements. We fatten them up. And it's hard to change. Why? Because changing our thoughts, honestly, it's easier said than done. But see, that's what Yahweh expects of us. He didn't say the road would be easy. He said, I want you to work. Prepare. To prepare means work. So, now we have these thoughts in our minds. What do? You know, we don't hold on to them like a warm blanket on a cold night, because some of these thoughts, you know, we treasure. We have to treat them like the leavening that they are and get rid of them. And that's going to take pushing. It's going to take forcing. It's going to take recognizing this thought is leavened. What do I do now? A while back, one of the Kahans said, beg Yahweh. Do you all remember that speech he gave, that sermon? He said, you want to stay in the house? Beg Yahweh. Because if we fail to prepare, we fail Yahweh. If we fail to prepare, we fail Yahweh. And Yahweh will allow us to leave. That's a fact. Is there anyone in this room who doesn't know someone who's left the house of Yahweh? Okay, I see no hands. So that tells me we all know someone who's left the house of Yahweh. Yahweh allows it. Why? Because if our minds and hearts are not with him, he tells us that he will raise stones to replace us. I don't want a stone to replace me. I don't want it. So I took a minute to look up in Yametria, Yahweh allows. And it's word 2403 from word 2398. Yahweh allows an offense. Sometimes habitual sinfulness and its penalty. Yahweh allows it. From word 2398, to sin, to forfeit, commit sin. And I thought the rest was pretty interesting. To cleanse. To cleanse harm we have done, crime, penalty, purge, purify. Yahweh allows these things. He's not going to stop anybody from walking out the gate. He might send counselors to beg you, to plead with you. But if your mind, if the mind has these thoughts that are festering, the gate swings both ways. It will let us in, and it will allow us to leave. We have to consider Yeshua Messiah, our perfect example. If we look to Mark, Yakin and Mark, page 777, 1436. Now we have to remember that Yeshua was like us, a human being. He too had thoughts that he had to purify. This is why it said he was tempted. He too had emotions that he had to deal with. So if we look at Mark 14, and for time's sake, I'm going to start with, he took Kepha, Jacob, and Yochanan with him and began to be full of dread and deeply distressed. That's an emotional response. And said to them, my soul is so overcome with sorrow that I am at the point of death. Stay here and watch. My soul is so overcome with sorrow that I am at the point of death. Let's skip down to 36. And he said in praying, notice he turned in prayer in his distress to Yahweh. Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me, but not what I will, but what you will. So sometimes in looking at how someone responds to something emotionally, we get insight into their thoughts. What was Yeshua's thoughts at this time? Those Herodians, those Pharisees. Look at the point they done brought me to. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think he was asking and begging Yahweh, give me the strength. See, he didn't have these 11 thoughts in his mind. I stopped for a minute and I thought about what Yahweh wills. And I looked it up in Yamatria. Yahweh's will is word 2351. And it means whiteness, noble. When I looked up what the color white means, it is the most complete and pure, the color of perfection. White is purity, innocence, wholeness, completion, righteousness, cleanliness, both physically and mentally. That's Yahweh's will. That's what Yeshua asks for. Not you, my will, Father, but your will. And as we prepare for Passover, as we take the 11 thoughts off the shelves of our minds, remember, don't put them back. Call out and beg Yahweh for his will. Father, let your will be done in my life so that I can become perfect as Yeshua was perfect. Thank you for your time.
Shalom, great family of Yahweh. Please be seated. The title of my speech today is Put Your Hand to the Plow, Look Forward, Don't Look Back. I was thinking of Yeshua's memorial that's quickly coming upon us and what it means to us, what it means to take on Yeshua's character. And I was listening to a song that was talking about the donkeys, describing them as being stubborn and steadfast. And I thought about that, and it's like Yeshua was stubborn and steadfast. Now, just to clarify that, he wasn't stubborn and being rebellious, but the word stubborn, it means unyielding, resolute, adamant, immovable, unbending. That was Yeshua when it came to keeping and teaching Yahweh's laws. The word steadfast means faithful and loyal. Again, it means immovable, firmly fixed in place, firm in belief and determination to adhere to a cause or purpose. That was Yeshua. And so I looked up stubborn and steadfast donkeys like Yeshua in Yamatria. We can have slide number 2. Now those numbers are 2357, 2628, and 438. And I'm only going to cover a little bit for time's sake, some of the words, but I want us to really think about Yeshua, what it means to be like him, and how his mind was always looking forward to doing Yahweh's work. And even on the stake, when he was dying, he was looking forward to this last day's work and beholding our great overseer. Now the word 2357 in the Greek means reverencing and worshiping Yahweh. That was Yeshua 100% of his life, reverencing or worshiping Yahweh. The Hebrew word from Gesenius' lexicon number 2357, means to be white. He was the perfect example of having that white garment of humility. And in Greek, number 2628 means to accompany closely, to follow after, among, to be in the same way with. He was 100% in unity with Yahweh. And it means to accompany specifically as a disciple. And I thought about us. And the first scripture that came to my mind was Yohanan 13:35, where it says, "And all the world will know that we are his disciples because of what? The love we have for one another." And Yeshua and Yeshua's memorial showed the ultimate act of love by dying, not just for us, but for the whole world. Sisters, we have to perfect that same ultimate love that Yeshua had, or we won't be a part of this kingdom. We can't develop that ultimate love if we look back, if we have any part of the world in our mind, in our lives, or in our character. We don't see that in Yeshua. He did not have the world in his character. He did not bend when it came to the law. He was uncompromising when it came to keeping and teaching Yahweh's laws. And even in his day, he seen people who were being called who looked back to the world. And he pointed it out and he corrected them. He taught them those laws because there are many laws that teach us to come out of the world. And some of those examples where he showed this was in Matthew 13:22, where he talked about the three out of four. Well, one of those three left Yahweh, or would leave Yahweh, who were called, because of the cares of this world, because of material wealth, the lust for riches. In Luke 9:59-62, he talks about how he was calling somebody out, "Come follow me." And the person's like, "Oh, let me go bury my father. Let me go on vacation and say farewell to, you know, people I'm supposed to have left behind." And he said, "Let the dead bury the dead. Let them take care of themselves. I'm calling you out to me." And he said, "If you put your hand to the plow and look back, you're not worthy of this kingdom." In Yohanan Mark 10:28-31 and Luke 14:26-27, he said, "Those that I have called to me, who come to me, but yet love father, mother, brother, sister, children, house, land, material wealth more than me, cannot be my disciple." And in Matthew 19:21-22, he showed how there was one who said, "I've kept all the laws all of my life, since my youth. I've kept the Sabbath day, don't eat unclean food, don't, you know, break purity laws, none of that. I've kept all these things. What do I still lack?" And Yeshua knew he wasn't paying his tithe. He didn't have that ultimate love for others in supporting this work and helping get the message out. So he said, "Go and take care of what you have to take care of. Make this right and pay your tithe." And what occurred? The man left. He left Yahweh because the lust for material wealth. "I work 6 days a week and make $50 an hour, and you want me to give that up?" That was more important to him than to serve Yahweh. And sisters, we can't make those same mistakes if we want to be a part of this family. And as the great deaconess before me said, we have 13 weeks till Passover. That's 94 days from today to Yeshua's memorial. 94 days to work on perfecting this love for this family that we've been called to. 94 days to stop looking back, to not be like Lot's wife, to not look back to anything this world has. 94 days to work on coming completely out of this world. And Pastor said it last week. He was very adamant about that. He said, "We need to put a billboard up. Come out from among them and be separate. Don't partake of this world." Because we have the biggest job to do than any other work for the last 6,000 years. And great sisters, in 2 Kefa 1:10, it says, "Therefore, my sisters, be all the more diligent," or more, putting more effort in, "to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you will never fall." So I looked up that word calling. It means an invitation to call forth, to appoint one to salvation, to give a name to invite or summon, to receive the name of. We've been invited and we accepted this calling. we were baptized into the family name of Yahweh. Now, this word election is what we are going to achieve if we put our hands to the plow and don't look back. The word election means selection, chosen, the act of picking out, choosing to select, to make a choice, to choose out for oneself. That's what Yahweh is doing right now. And I remember our great overseer, that sticks with me because I've been saying it in my prayers, that the beings in heaven is going to identify those who Yahweh is choosing for himself to finish his family. They are going to identify the very elect. Now that word sure means to be firm, stable, steadfast, unshaken, constant. We have to be a part of this house that's built on the rock, not on the sand that's going to be blown away with this nuclear storm that's coming. Now, in everything that Pastor's been saying lately and with the great speakers today, Pastor said this Passover is a matter of life and death to be here. It's critical to be here. This could be the feast where Yahweh's family is sealed and he lets the nuclear baby go off, where Yahweh's family will be finished. That's all of us. Now, great sisters, in closing, as we see Yeshua's memorial coming up and this great feast of Passover, we need to encourage each other to build this love for this work. Build this love for each other. No more looking back. Look forward to this great work we have to do, this great work we have to finish, like our great high priest Yeshua. And looking forward to seeing him and being with him, our great overseer, in this great kingdom, because Yeshua said, I come quickly. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, family of Yahweh. Please be seated. The title of my speech is It Takes a City. I would like the attention of every parent, every teacher, every counselor, and every supervisor, anyone who deals with our young people. We've all been teenagers, and I'd like for you to think back on your teenage years. What were they like? How did you feel? How did you act? How were your relationships with the adults in your lives? Personally, I was a mess. I was a rebel from hell on the path of self-destruction. I had no boundaries. I had no guidance. But I don't fault my parents for the choices that I made. I know they did the best that they knew how. They just repeated the cycle. And as parents ourselves, I guarantee that most of us did or do the same. But it has to stop. We have to do better. Our parents didn't have the solution. We do. There's nothing new under the sun. Today's teenagers aren't so different from us. They have feelings. They have struggles. They have tests and trials. And they have an adversary who is hard at work against them. Let us not make her job easy. These youth are our future. I've been in Yahweh's house for nearly 3 decades, and over the course of that time, I have seen many young people leave, including my own children. And each time, it feels like a little piece of you dies inside, especially when they're your own. You don't grow immune to it. It weighs heavily upon you. And as a parent and a teacher and a counselor, I can't help but feel that I failed them.
So I'm saying to you today, stop. Stop expecting them to be perfect when we aren't near perfection ourselves. Stop the criticizing and start trying to understand them. Stop the assuming, stop the accusing, stop the blaming, and start asking. Investigate a matter. Stop blowing them off. We are not so busy that we cannot take the time to simply ask, how are you feeling? How was your day? Give them an opportunity to talk. Allow them to express themselves without being shut down, without being ridiculed, and without being mocked. Stop the nitpicking. Stop only seeing everything that they do wrong. That was something I learned from the overseer many years ago. Start recognizing their great qualities. They do have them. The peaceful solution teaches us to negate the negative, accentuate the positive, encourage them, praise them, show your gratitude for them. Let them know how pleasing they are, because that is all they want, is to please us. Stop applying the unrighteous titles and labels to them. It was brought up in Peaceful Solution class recently that if you see something in your child that you don't like, look in the mirror. Our children mirror us. No, it's not their friend's fault they do what they do or they act the way they act. They act out all on their own because they're crying out. Recognize it for what it is. I'd like to share something with you that I read recently. It says, beneath every behavior, there is a feeling. And beneath each feeling is a need. And when we meet that need, rather than focus on the behavior, we begin to deal with the cause, not the symptom. It is within our power to either make or break a child. How we treat them is how they will become. I read a quote that says, treat people as if they were what they should be, and you would help them to become what they can be. Our great overseer does that for us. He has been telling us for 40 years, you are 99.9% perfect. Even while we were a flawed mess, he told us that because he knew our potential. He knew what we could become. He's never quit on us. He's never given up. He has patiently instructed us and guided us. And we have to do the same for our children and young people. It's said that it takes a village to raise a child. But I say to you, City of Israel, it takes a city to raise a holy nation of sons and daughters. Let us do our part. And young people, you have a part as well. Respect your authorities. Accept your correction with humility. Know your place and stay within your boundaries and communicate. We aren't mind readers. We can read your body language, but we don't know what's going on in your head unless you talk to us. Adults are not your enemies. Most of us came out of the belly of the beast, and we don't want you to be swallowed up. So you have to learn to trust us. And when we all do our part, this family will be completed. Please stand for the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. Shabbat shalom. Please be seated.
Man, I admire that judge. Oh,
she tells it like it is. She's like a little mini Israel Hawkins. Oh, man, I don't even know how, like, where to start. I'm just, I gotta settle myself down. Okay, so the title of my talk today is It Starts with a Cup of Coffee. I know you all are always at the cafeteria getting your coffee, so I know I'm going to hit every one of you here. So it starts with a cup of coffee. And the theme, I want to show it on the overhead, is Yeshua gave the perfect example. He scolded sin and praised righteousness. Yeshua wasn't believed either, but he kept the faith. If you notice, there are three things in this theme. He scolded sin, he praised righteousness, and Yeshua wasn't believed either, but he kept the faith. So these three things actually starts with a cup of coffee. And I say this because I've been in your shoes before. You fall short in studying. There's so many things going on in your life, and it's just maybe when you get around to it. Well, I went to the class. But I noticed that when I take on that kind of lifestyle, my distance from Yahweh just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So I said, you know what? I need to stop with this nasty habit, and I need to start making studying a priority in my life. Yeah, brush your teeth. But as soon as you're done brushing your teeth, you know what I do now? I get myself a cup of coffee. I do. And I make studying a very desirable thing to me. I make sure I'm sitting in front of the heater on a cold morning. I'm comfortable. I have plenty of space to spread out all of my books. And I'm ready. I'm ready to study. I'm ready to repeat in my mind what was taught to me. And we all know, too, that studying, we don't study like the world, where we try to remember every single thing. We study by putting line upon line, which means you're getting information from the books of Israel. You have to get information from the prophetic words, the newsletters, the classes. And you take all of these things that you accumulated just in 1 week, and you say, okay, so where does that fit in my book of Yahweh? And I'm telling you, let me give you a great example of this. Can I get the overhead again? This is my book of Israel. We are in the first book of Israel, okay? And as you can tell, there's no notes. I had this book for how many years? We talk about dusting the books off. No notes. I think I read it. I think I did. But because of the inspiration that came from Yahweh's wonderful body of teachers, we now have the Book of Israel class. And let me show you what I do now. You see all those notes? I take all these notes in class because I'm a great student. And then I go home the very next morning, and I transfer them into the book of Yahweh. And I say this because, number one, I'm really bad at remembering everything. Second of all, when you're a teacher, you have to carry the information with you. You can't go off on your own. You need this book of Yahweh. And I can't carry all the books of Israel's with me. So I write it all in here.
press room, please give me a larger margin next time. I mean, you just have no space. Sometimes if you open up somebody's Book of Yahweh, they have pages. They have pages taped onto the edge, and they flip it open. And they say, oh, yeah, that's where I listed the Ten Kings. Oh, yeah, that's where Pastor said. I'm like, wow. Wow. And I also want to encourage the studying, because another thing that really inspired me to start studying is because I would sit in class, and I would see these young people teaching. I'm looking at her right now. And they're younger than me. They've been here for just a little while. And the amount of knowledge that comes flowing through their mouths, and all they're doing is holding a newsletter. And I'm like, well, she's quoting scriptures. She's quoting sermons from what year? What's that? You weren't even born, baby. And it's like, why didn't I know those things? It's because I didn't start with a cup of coffee in the morning with my studies. And this is why, you know, you go to classes to get inspired. You come to services to get inspired, because you're like at all at the amount of knowledge and the wonderful work that Yahweh is doing with his people. You really do. But now, getting into Yeshua being in our example, when we study the scriptures and we study the books of Israel and all these prophetic words and these newsletters and we listen to the sermons, we are actually studying, and I want to break this down, mannerism. We are. We are studying how to conduct ourselves according to Yahweh's laws. So remember, in this quote, there was three things: that Yeshua scolded sin, he praised righteousness, and he kept the faith. So when we study, we realize that through Yeshua's example, he showed us how to do these three things. First of all, he scolded sin. And when you hear the word scold, we remember our parents' face. Like, you remember that look. But Yeshua, when he scolded sin, I want you to forget about that word scold. Think about the word, we heard it several times today, correct. He corrected sin. He corrected sin. And again, the speaker spoke about it today too. The Pharisees and Sadducees, they were nitpickers, weren't they? They went to Yeshua, like, Yeshua, guess what? Your disciples, they broke the laws. They are so unclean. Look at the way they eat. They don't wash their hands. They are so unclean. Yeshua said, why are you nitpicking? Why are you nitpicking? And what was Yeshua's answer? It's not what goes in the mouth that makes you defiled. It's what comes out. And of course, little tiny disciples were like, what do you mean by that? Because out of the mouth, the heart speaks. What are you bringing out of you? Your thoughts, your feelings, your actions. That's what makes you the sinful one. Not because you don't have disinfectant to wash your hands before you eat. Nitpicking, right? So Yeshua was showing you through his example right there. You know, I am going to correct sin because I don't want nothing to do with sin. But I'm going to explain to you what really is sin. What it really is. So he was an awesome teacher in this. He was an awesome teacher in this. And he praised righteousness. And one of the great deaconess used the exact example with the centurion. He was top. I mean, he was one of those top dogs. And he had people underneath him. But it was his servant that he traveled and made sure he got to Yeshua and said, Yeshua, just... I mean, he could have asked for riches. He could have asked Yahweh, Yeshua, please bless me. Make sure that my household is fine. But no. You ever had an appointment with pastors? It's only like 5 minutes. It's like that with Yeshua. For that very small moment, like, look, you don't have to waste your time. Just heal my servant. Again? A nobody in your house, among your people, this nobody, you want me to heal that nobody? No, to the centurion, he loved that somebody, because that somebody was really, really important to him. And Yeshua, what do? He praised it. He said, of all Israel, you're the only one that practices righteousness, that you love your servant, you love your brother, your sisters. So Yeshua, he didn't hold back on praising. He really did, especially to a stranger who he didn't know. And I think we fall short in that. And I would say all my life, the way I was raised, you don't praise your children. You don't. I mean, hello, the Asian thing, you know, got to have an A+ all the time. It's a hard teaching. It's like, no, apparently that child will probably know I am very well pleased with her, but I am not going to let her know that and boost her pride. Oh, no. No, it's not. It's not. When you praise somebody, you are reinforcing their positive behavior. We can't just expect someone to just know that we appreciate them or that, you know, we recognize their dedication or that they're a hard worker. They need that feedback. It's not boasting someone's pride. It's you're showing them love and concern, and you're showing them that they must continue in this great path that they're doing. The last thing of all, Yeshua really showed his faith. He showed how strong he was in Yahweh's way. And Yeshua, he was able to show his faith because he was educated. Again, back to the cup of coffee, studying. He was educated. He was very educated in the prophecies concerning him. Now you think about this. Because he knew and he was confident in the things that will come and all the things that was concerning him, every time he was mistreated, every time he was broken, they were trying to break him, he would not retaliate. And that's the big thing. He won't retaliate. I mean, there's a lot of crazy things occurring to him, but he said, "Know what? I'm not going to retaliate." They came to arrest him. They came to do things to him and beat him. He's like, "You know what? Because I know the prophecy. And I want to show you here too in Matthew 26:64, when they came to arrest Yeshua and was brought before the high priest. Now Yeshua really is the high priest right now, but there's a deceitful high priest, you know, that took over the temple, and that high priest, he thought he was high priest, said, "Tell me, are you truly the Messiah?" Mocking him. And what did Yeshua do? He was confident that he was, because he knew the prophecies. He said, "You will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of Yahweh very soon. You will. You will." And he was confident. But did he, like, when he was being mocked, did he get upset? Did he fight back? No, he didn't. He had that mannerism to control himself because he was confident of who he was. And we have the opportunity because we all are in this prophecy, this plan of Yahweh. And if we are confident, we can also hold that same mannerism. We can also keep our faith strong. The thing with this, though, when we learn how to correct sin, when we learn how to also praise each other for our righteousness, the righteousness that each other do, and we keep strong, we only learn this because we have Israel Hawkins. Is that true? This book of Yahweh, and I compare it to a drawing, right? It's just black and white. You know, I always hate drawing. I always hate coloring. And praise Father Yahweh, Israel Hawkins, he colors that picture for us. He puts it together and he expounds about the examples that are in the scriptures. And he makes it real to us, especially. And so when we apply how Yeshua's perfect example, if we apply his perfect example with the teaching of Israel Hawkins into our lives, we begin to follow and fulfill Matthew 5:14. Let me read that to you quickly. Matthew 5:14, but I'm going to read it so that you understand that we are this. We are fulfilling this. Because we are now following Yeshua's example. Matthew 5:14, "You are the light of the world. In these last days, this city of Israel, which is set on a hill, cannot be hidden." Now I want to show you this coffee cup last. Can I get the overhead again? It says, "Let your light shine." And I am sorry, I saved money to buy this cup because I said, when I look at it every morning, it is a reminder to me, study, study and apply and practice righteousness so that your light can shine like Yeshua. You all please stand for our next teacher.
Shabbat Shalom again, great saints of Yahweh. Please sit. Last Sabbath, when the Great One Sent spoke, he said, Yahweh's laws is that spirit that begets us and converts the whole person. He said, Yahweh's laws is that spirit that begets us and converts the whole person. Converts the whole person is the part I want us to capture today. Converts the whole person. And on that, I'll give my theme. Psalm 19:7. Psalm 19:7 is very familiar to us. The laws of Yahweh are perfect and converts the whole person. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making the simple ones wise. Is there a law of Yahweh? You like it? You're very glad that others are upholding it, but it's just not for you at this time. Don't answer. Is there a law of Yahweh? You know, maybe if we keep it right now, maybe I will lose something. Maybe something will be taken from me. So let me not push it at this time. The laws of Yahweh are perfect, converting the whole person. When in our spiritual lives, when in our spiritual walk with Yahweh, do we think it is time for us to surrender our whole persons so the laws of Yahweh that are perfect can convert it? When in our spiritual lives do we deem it necessary to surrender our whole persons so that the laws of Yahweh can convert it? What is your whole person? Children, can I show them a picture, please? It's right there. Is that your whole person? Adults, is that your whole person? Well, there are parts we cannot quite see, like our hearts, our mind, we cannot quite see them. You see right here. The Great One sent Israel Hawkins, the Eighth Book of Israel, Part 1. Eighth Book of Israel, Part 1. The first 5 chapters, it's a very nice series. Please check it out. On cleansing the heart and the mind, Yahweh's way. Cleansing the heart and the mind, Yahweh's way. Cleansing Yahweh's way, starting with the heart and the mind. And he talks about cleansing, he uses fasting, and he says, fasting can cleanse the body physically. Yes, we know that, nice things. And he said, also spiritually. So that's where I want to go today. He said, starting with the heart and the mind. And I saw the second speaker, her topic was, how strong is your heart and your mind? Your heart. What is there in the heart that you think we need to wash or clean? Psalms 51:10 tells us, David says, the psalmist, create within us a clean heart, O Yahweh, and create within us a clean heart. Let's stay right there. If there's a clean heart, is there an unclean heart? It sounds kind of harsh, but let's just use opposites. If there's a clean heart, create within us a clean heart, O Yahweh. Would it stand to reason there's an unclean heart? What does a clean heart do? What does an unclean heart do? Would you say a clean heart maybe remembers the Sabbath day to keep it holy? Would you say, just for opposite sake, would you say an unclean heart does not remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy? Just opposites. And renew a right spirit within us. Renew a right spirit. So if there's a right spirit, is there a wrong spirit? Just opposites only, give and take. If the King David is saying, if there's a create within us a new spirit, a renew our spirit, then there's a bad spirit. What does a right spirit do? What does a not right spirit do? Give me an example. Lust. Maybe a right spirit would do not lust after anything that's your neighbor's. A right spirit would do that. Do not do it. A wrong spirit would lust after your neighbor's pencils, crayons, oil. Okay. If we want to consider the whole person, the physical, the heart, the mind, the spirit, which is part of the heart and the mind, Yahweh's laws is our spirit, we should feed it. What is it in the mind that we need to clean? Our mind, he said, great one, St. Israel Hawkins says, starting with the heart and the mind. Let's go back to the heart, a clean heart. Let's say you tell the children, sweetie, after you eat your lunch, after you eat, can you throw the garbage? And your answer, you hear, well, when I'm calling 911, you're bullying me to throw the garbage. Clean heart, unclean heart, just opposites. When those things occur, what occurs to our hearts and our mind? The laws of Yahweh are perfect and can convert the whole person. The physical, the heart, the mind, the spirit, the spiritual. Mankind, we have bred all the things that make our heart and our mind disorders, you want to call it? What are all those disorders in the mind? Eating disorder, walking disorder, sleeping disorders, all the psychopathic tendencies in our mind. How they, everything, time you hear psycho, it means mental disorders, mental challenges, psychophysiological disorders. What are all those fancy words? Yahweh just says, the whole person. I like that. The whole person. It's okay. They can use, science can use nice words. That's fine. But I'd like to show us a small clip on a disorder in the mind. Could we play it, please?
Okay, Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. Can you open your exercise books, please? You've got a 1,500-word essay to do. I'd like you to choose one of the themes from the board and start to plan it. Ah, the wanderer returns. It's another 2 weeks behind. See me after class. As I was saying, choose one of the themes on the board and start planning your essay.
Yeah, I've got one for you. How many teachers does it take to change a light bulb? No? All right, how many depressed people does it take to change a light bulb? Doesn't matter, it's always dark, isn't it? When you wake up, you've got a dead arm. Can't control it, can't make it do anything. Imagine that. in your whole body, in your mind, your whole life. Remember when I was off school? Remember all the jokes? What options you're choosing, Michael? Getting out of bed, staying awake, coming to class. Only that's when I was so low. Getting out of bed wasn't an option for me. Even on Facebook. Changing my status to still skiving. It's funny, isn't it? It just makes it a little harder. Sometimes it's already too hard. I mean, you lot are my mates, right? Right?
Can I ask you a question? Who created the human body? Who created the human body? Yeah, with the power? With the mind in it? Yes? I believe Yahweh, with his eyes closed, he can tell us and show us precisely where that first act that was committed, mankind, that started on the cause to disorders in our mind. And I believe that Great Father Yahweh can tell us precisely what to do to heal it. Do you agree, Great House? I believe we need to plead to Father Yahweh and ask him from his Great House, show us what to do to heal, because Psalm 19:7 says the laws of Yahweh are perfect, converting person. When in our spiritual lives do we see the need to surrender our whole persons to Yahweh the power, so that his laws, which are perfect, can convert it? And with this, I turn over to the great priests of the house of Yahweh.